The name of the interviewers are Edward Garlick, G-I-R-L-I-C-K, and
Tabitha Ertholaw, A-R-T-H-R-O-W-L-L-A-W.
Assisted by
Justine Ertholaw, E-A-R-T-H-R-O-W-L.
The name of the interviewee is
Barbara Pearl Robson, R-O-B-S-O-N.
The interviewers are the interview is taking place at Hopton Street, London. The interview is for Grandchildren of the Blitz project. Barbara, can I ask you for your name and date of your birth?
Yes, as I say, my name is Barbara Pearl, and I was born on the 1st of August 1930. So I'm just 80. I had my 80th birthday on Sunday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you, Edward.
So how old were you in the Blitz?
I was 9 when the war broke out. So I was 11 when the Blitz was going on. And I lived in Beckenham in Kent.
Could you please tell us about the beginning of the war?
Yes, I can. When the war broke out, our family was on holiday in Wales. And of course, it was very, very dramatic to hear that war had broken out. And my dad had to leave us down there because we didn't know how soon we were going to get bombed. Some people thought it was going to start immediately, you see. So Daddy had to come back to London, and I stayed down in Wales with my mum and my sister Betty.
Could you please tell me a bit about, how old were your brothers and sisters?
How old was my sister? She was 5 years older than I, so she was 14 when the war broke out. So she would have been about 15, 16 when the Blitz was going on.
Was your sister a bit bossy?
Oh, she was bossy. Was my sister bossy? I should say so. And she always had to look after me. I was 5 years younger, you see. So it really got on her nerves to always have to be looking after me, because I naturally couldn't do things as quickly and as cleverly as she could.
How did it feel when you actually had to come back to London, when you left Wales and you came back to London?
Well, to be honest with you, none of it was really making much sense at that time. But what I do remember, one of my earliest memories of the war, were Daddy and Mummy taking Betty and I to one side and saying to us, "We've got something very, very serious that we have to ask both of you. You're only children, but we have to ask you this very difficult question, and that is, you will know that many children are going away to live in the country because to be safe, and they're called evacuees. Now, our question to you is, do you want to go to the country with the other children and be safe, or do you want to stay in Beckenham near London with your mummy and daddy and almost certainly be killed?" Well, that was a dreadful question, wasn't it? But I thought to myself, I was only 9, and I thought, well, I don't like the idea of staying in London to be killed, but how can I say I'd rather leave my mummy and daddy to be killed? So I said, I'd rather stay with you and be killed. And that's what happened, except, of course, I wasn't killed.
So how did it feel when that question was asked to you?
Well, as I say, I was kind of more embarrassed than anything, because I just thought it would sound so terribly rude if I were to say, well, I'd rather go to the country and be safe, you see. I couldn't really take seriously at that age what staying in London and being killed might be. See, we didn't have television in those days, and we didn't see all these killings and all the rest of it going on television like you children of today. So it didn't really make that much sense to me. But that was the way I answered it anyway. And so Betty and I, we stayed in London, and there we were throughout all the Blitz that was to follow.
I was going to ask what your sister's decision was, but obviously she stayed too.
She stayed too.
And
that's
did you talk about that, the decision you made?
No, it was just taken for granted, really and truly, that was it. And that was that.
What about other children in the area? What decisions did they make?
Well, a lot of them were evacuated, of course they were, but you see, naturally, I wasn't so. I can't remember that any of our friends were evacuated. No, I was concerned with the children at school, and there we were, and we stayed going to school throughout the Blitz.
Could you please tell me a little bit about the games you played during the Blitz?
The games we played, Tabitha. Well, one of the main games that we played during the Blitz was collecting the shrapnel. Now, do you know what shrapnel is?
Yes.
Do you? You know that it's bits of bombs, don't you, and shells and that. That's right. Well, what used to happen was in the morning after all the raids at night, we would spend, probably we'll talk about this more fully later on, but what would happen on the way to school in the mornings, we would collect bits of shrapnel from the pavements, and some of them would still be quite hot. Some of them were quite big pieces, you know, they might be as long as a ruler, and jagged and heavy, nasty looking things. But anyway, they didn't seem so to us, because what we did, you see, we would swap them. We'd go to school, and then we'd see who'd got the biggest piece, and somebody would say, well, I haven't got a bit shaped like that in my collection, so I'll give you three small pieces if you'll give me your one big piece. Or they might say, I'll give you a couple of marbles if you'll give me your piece of shrapnel.
Two things, Barbara. One, it's kind of like the things they have today, like card collecting games and all that kind of stuff. And also, were there any serious injuries by collecting the hot shrapnel? Because there must have been some vital injuries.
Well, I don't remember any, not from collecting the shrapnel, but of course there were many injuries, of course, from the actual bombs. Oh, yes. Dreadful.
Because I would have thought like your parent might have asked you to wear some gloves or something.
Well, no, they didn't, in actual fact. No, that didn't occur to them to think that we... on the whole, I don't think children were looked after quite to the same extent that you are these days. You know, no, we ran all sorts of risks that you wouldn't these days, that your parents wouldn't let you.
So what do you think made parents from them not be so as responsible as then? Do you think it's just like after the war to see the effects of just...
I think so. I think it's part and parcel of people becoming more aware. And I think television's got quite a lot to do with that. I think that on the whole, people tend to think more now. Think about all sorts of things, perhaps, that I don't think people on the whole did so much before the war. Because one of the things, you see, before the war, our home, do you know we didn't have any books at home? You'll find that hard to believe, won't you? But it was very rare to have books on the whole. So people didn't think so much, and I think it's since people and parents have thought more that they've taken greater care of the children, on the whole.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised when you said books were rare, because I thought, like, during the bombing, when you're quiet, that would be something you'd want to do, because I think that's what Anne Frank used to do, read her book and write in her diary.
You're absolutely right. Well, of course, it as you know, Edward, we really mustn't generalise about things. I can only talk about how it was in my family, but I know that we didn't... I mean, Betty and I would receive books for Christmas and birthdays, you see, and so we certainly would read those. But whilst... during the Blitz, I think what we did mainly whilst we were in the air raid shelter, we would probably play games. Now, the games we'd play would be board games, like Snakes and Ladders. We'd play a lot of... Or a game called Ludo. I don't know whether you know...
Oh, yeah.
You know Ludo?
Yeah.
So we'd have that. And we also had, sometimes, if we stayed at home during a raid... We had our what was called a bagatelle board. That was a peculiar game. And what was the other one? Dominoes. We'd play dominoes. And we might play a game of snap with cards. But I think it was probably because you would be on edge, or parents, not the children would be on edge so much during a raid, but the parents would be very on edge, and the atmosphere... would be pretty, you know, people would be very tense.
How did you feel yourself during the raids when you were with your sister?
Well, I suppose what I felt during myself during the raids was I was more concerned with the effect upon on my mother and father. You see, my dad, who'd been a soldier in the First World War and who'd been in the trenches and he'd been a prisoner of war and so locked up a great deal, he couldn't bear to stay indoors. So even though it was dangerous to go out, you were warned not to go out. But he enlisted as an air raid warden, as was called, which meant he had to go out. So he did that. But my poor mother, she was so frightened. And she just used to stand in the corner of our dining room. Our dad had had our dining room shorn up. It was called shorn up. Now that meant we had great big timber supports brought in to help hold the ceiling up, and there was a big brick wall built outside our French windows to the garden that was called a blast wall, so that if a bomb went off near to us, the glass wouldn't get blown in on us. And the other thing we had to do, of course you've probably seen this in films or perhaps at the Imperial War Museum, we had to put crisscross sticky paper on our windows, you've seen that, so that if the windows did go, they didn't fly, the jagged glass didn't fly everywhere. Now, it was very dangerous, that. And of course we had blackout curtains, very strict. Not a chink of light at all must show, you see, because the bombers would be on the lookout trying to tell where the towns were.
It must be a bit worrying when all of the London is just blacked out and the bombers just bomb anyway. It's like a game of just wherever it can hit, and you might be just the unlucky one, and must be terrifying.
Absolutely. It was terrifying, but of course, and the thing that had the worst effect of all was what came really after the Blitz, and that was what were called the flying bombs. And you know, remember what they were called? Perhaps you heard you remember they were called doodle bugs. When they first came over, we didn't know what they were. We thought they were small aeroplanes, and they made a terrible noise, a dreadful noise, a roaring noise. And what used to happen, they were flying bombs. They didn't have a pilot on board at all. You see, they were the first remote-controlled kind of rockets, in a way. What used to happen, they would be set to go a certain number of miles, and then the engine would cut out, and then they would crash to the ground and explode. So what would happen, you'd be there in your shelter, and you'd hear this dreadful noise, silence. And then you'd wait. But you never knew where it was going to land. you'd hear it cut out, and then you'd go, oh, and this was when my poor mother would stand in the corner of the room and she'd hold her throat somehow. She'd put her hands up to her throat and she would pray silently, please, 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 let the bomb go over, don't let it fall on us. But it was terrible, you can imagine, that when we prayed for the bomb not to fall on us, we were praying that it was going to fall on somebody else. It was going to fall somewhere, you see, it was awful. But the actual blitz itself, when we had these waves of bombers coming over from Germany, wave after wave after wave they'd come, and you'd hear them droning and droning approaching, and then the anti-aircraft guns would start and they would shake the ground absolutely, and if you went outside, of course you'd see all the searchlights. The searchlights would be trying to pick out the bombers and the guns would be pointing at the bombers, so there was a lot going on.
I just want to ask a question. If there were lights just to shine up in the air to find the bombers, wouldn't the bombers like bomb into the lights and like black out those lights?
Well, that was a very good question, because round the lights were the big anti-aircraft guns, artillery, you see. But where the searchlights were going up were also the guns. So they would try. They would try to bomb both the guns and the searchlights, you see. Oh no, it was very scary. And of course, we haven't mentioned yet the incendiary bombs. Now, they were even more frightening. The incendiary bombs were much smaller, but when they landed, they set fire. They had a special substance in them. I should be able to tell you all about this, but I can't. But anyway, they created fire. And of course, that was why we had what was called the air raid wardens. And they were ordinary, just ordinary people who signed up to spend so many hours a night walking up and down the streets, wearing their tin hats, carrying a whistle, carrying a bucket with a special pump. And then if they saw incendiary bombs come down and a fire start, then they would blow their whistle and other people would come running with their buckets and pumps. But it was ever so kind of what we'll say primitive arrangement, you know, a bucket and a pump to try and put out quite a big fire, you see.
Did your father used to tell you stories about his experiences as a warden?
Oh my goodness. Well, he not so much as a warden, to be honest with you. What he did tell me, particularly more than my sister, endless stories about his experiences in the First World War.
Right.
But my dad, during the actual raids, during the Blitz, my dad, the raids had a terrible effect on him. He wouldn't speak, actually. He just had to get out from any situation that felt like being trapped, that he might be trapped. He preferred to take his chance on the streets of being hit, maybe with shrapnel, you see. The chances of being hit with shrapnel were great if you went out in the streets during a raid. That was when it was really dangerous. That was why you were advised to stay indoors. So does that answer your question? Yes.
Just one more about this. Were there any of the houses near you hit by
bombs? Yes. I mean, there was one night when what they called a stick of bombs. Now, what they mean by a stick of bombs was several. What used to happen, the German planes would come over and they would head for Docklands, right? Because they wanted to attack the shipping. What they wanted to do, they wanted to destroy the ships that were coming in with food. They were attempting a blockade, you know, like in the medieval times, they would be a siege around a castle. But it was a modern form of a siege. They wanted to stop the food getting through. So now I've lost the question now. No, where were
they?
Were
there houses in your
street? Oh, yes, like the stick of bombs. Thank you very much. A senior moment I had just then. Yes, the stick of bombs. Now, I was asleep that particular night under the shelter in our living room. It was called a Morrison shelter, and it was like a big table, and people could sleep on the floor under it. I knew nothing until the morning when my mother was shouting, "Are you going to sleep forever?" And what had happened was, during the night, practically, well, ever so many houses in our road had been totally bombed. Our ceilings had all come down, apart from the one room that was shorn up. And the windows had all been blown out. And if you can believe it, I had slept throughout all of it. My mother was not amused, because it was very, very frightening what was happening. We were one of the few people in those days to have a phone. You see, it's a totally different world now. What was happening was that our house, that mercifully had not been hit, had the phone and was being used as a reporting place. Also, it was being used, our front room was being used to receive wounded people. All this was going on and I was still asleep. You see, it just shows you how much a child, you see, is not affected in this kind of way. But what I do remember about that particular night, in our street lived two old sisters, and one of them had an artificial leg. And they lived in one of the houses that was completely wiped out. And these two poor old ladies were in our house. Mum was looking after them. They were terrified. And the one with the one leg had lost her artificial leg, poor soul. They couldn't find her artificial leg in the rubble. So she was so distressed about this. She was more distressed about the loss of her leg. But I'm sad to say, again, you see, children being children, my sister and I thought this was ever so funny.
So did you quite help them along whilst they were worrying about their house?
Well, I'm afraid not, my dear. I'm sad to say, no, we didn't. I think that mother decided that adults could manage better if we youngsters kept out of it, you see. But I do remember, and I feel very ashamed about this, why Betty and I thought it was so funny that this poor old lady should be worrying so much about her leg, but we did. But we were very, very lucky that night, because we were one of the very few houses that didn't receive what was called a direct hit. You see, all the others had gone down, bang, 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 and just left craters and heaps of rubble, you see.
Could you tell us a little bit about your family and friends?
Now, family and friends in the war. Well, my dad, he worked for a chain of groceries called the Home and Colonial Stores. And his job was to go round and inspect all these. Are you all right, Tabitha? Right. His job was to go round and check the stock, check that everything was all right. Now, in the war, this was quite a responsible job, because food was rationed, you see. So there would be people trying to steal, you see. Now, my poor dad, the shops he inspected were all in southeast London, and everywhere he went, the air raid sirens were going non-stop throughout, you know. There was raid after raid at night, mainly at night, but plenty during the day as well. So it was dangerous. Where he was going was always danger. And so my poor mother was in constant anxiety, you know, was he going to come home all right in the evening? Indeed, sometimes he had to sleep away from home. So that was for my my parents. Now, my mother, like most of the mums, she, apart from being worried about being potentially bombed, injured or killed, of course she was worried out of her life over how to feed us all the time. Because my dad was a very honest man, and although he worked in a food shop, in a food business, he never went on the black market. Now, you see, what was called the black market were people who stole food and then would sell it at high prices. You see, so people will, as you know, some people are very wicked and they will make the most, they will use a situation like that to their advantage. Well, my dad never did. So poor mummy, her life was spent, like most of the women, endlessly queuing for the tiny bits of rations that we got. I mean, we would have one egg each a week, if we were lucky. And as for a jar of marmalade, well, I think if we had a jar, that would have to last the four of us a month. You know, it was really real food was. And what I used to have, Mum and I used to come home from school for lunch, and I would go to the local baker who would bake potatoes in his oven, you know, a jacket potato in the oven. And Mum would give me tuppence, 2 pennies, to buy 2 potatoes from the baker on my way home. And we would have these, and there was no butter or marge to put on them. We'd just have a jacket potato with nothing on it for lunch.
Could I ask you 2 questions? One, your mum, it must have been a bit frightening not having any contact from your father if he was going to sleep somewhere else over the night.
It was frightening. It was frightening, Edward. You're quite right. You're a very thoughtful boy. I can see that, and it certainly was, and it put a strain on her because my mum had been a refugee herself, you see. She'd had a very hard life, and so, she had a similar kind of story to my father, really. See, she worried terribly when Dad was away, or if he didn't come home on time or anything like that. There was a tremendous fuss. And of course, he couldn't always let her know. It wasn't always, there were no mobile phones. We didn't have mobile phones, you see. So it wasn't always possible to phone and say, or he might be stuck on a train. Supposing there was a raid and the railway line was struck. This happened, you see. So he could be stuck anywhere. And so that all affected us. We knew, see, that mother would get very anxious and then she'd get angry and cross. So that meant Betty and I had to tiptoe around and be very careful and, you know, and oh dear, Mum's cross today and so on. But I'm sad again to say that we really weren't really understanding of just how awful it was for her.
Also, with someone in the Brits experience as you are, would you back up all those parents who say to their children people during the war would have ate all their plates?
They would have eaten all their plates. Now, I'm not sure I understand what you mean by that.
I mean, like, ate every bit of the food.
Oh, yes. Oh, at school. Oh, my goodness me. Now, when we did have school dinners, because they became so dreadful, the school dinners were so awful. And certainly that you had to eat everything, and teacher would stand over you and make you, you'd sit there until you ate it, and then you'd get detention as well on top of it if you didn't eat it. Well, my mother didn't believe in that. She didn't like that, and it was because she did go and speak to the school about it and said, no, you're not to do that to my children. I won't have them being forced to, because it was horrible. You know, sometimes we'd have, in those days, you see, the vegetables, people were growing vegetables where they could, and there was no, it wasn't like the supermarkets. So all the vegetables would have caterpillars and slugs and snails in them. Oh, well, yes, Tabitha, I can see your expression, dear, and it was like that. So if we had, oh dear, even when I think of it now, we had cabbage at school, or cauliflower was even worse. You were sure to find a caterpillar or a slug or two amongst it. And heaven help us if it was salad, you see, because then the slug would crawl out on the plate. So it wasn't a happy experience at all. No, the food was dreadful. But what was wonderful, my mum would be able to make a cake without, well, I don't know, there were so many things that she didn't have to put in it, but she seemed to be able to make a wonderful cake. Well, it was a luxury to us and we enjoyed it anyway.
Can I ask you, what was the food that they gave you in your school?
What was the, it might be...
Is that too much for you?
No, it's not too much for me, but it's not a happy memory. So we might have rabbit, rabbit stew, with this cabbage and with the dead slugs and whatnot lurking in it. And for afters, we might have, stewed rhubarb without sufficient sugar and some extremely lumpy custard, again, not sweet enough. No, it was truly, and if we had rice pudding, that was all full of lumps and there wouldn't be any jam to go with it. No, it was truly awful. It was horrible. And the meat, we had a stew. Oh dear, if it was like a beef stew, it would be mainly gristle and fat. And you see, as I say, you were supposed to eat it, and I simply couldn't. I used to try and hide it as best I could in my hanky or... Yeah, in those days, Tabitha, we wore thick blue knickers under our gym frocks, and in the knickers we had a little pocket for our hanky. And those of us that couldn't eat this dreadful gristle of fat, we'd try and put the bits in our school knickers.
Disgusting.
Well, it is disgusting, isn't it? Oh, there were plenty of things disgusting, I can tell you.
Did you go back to where the vegetables were grown, you said, in all
yes.
sorts of places. Did you grow vegetables in your garden? What did you use your garden for?
What did we? No, we didn't, in actual fact. Neither my mother nor my father. No, we had a shelter in the garden. We didn't have a big garden. It was only a little suburban garden, and we had what was called an Anderson shelter. Now, that was a hole in the ground with a corrugated cover. And we also had what was called, that was called an Anderson shelter. And then we also had a Morrison shelter. That was the one in the kitchen that was like a big, much bigger than this table, four times as big as this table, made of metal. And that's where we would, but we mainly, when we stayed indoors, because I'll come to something else in a minute, during the part of the bits when we were still staying in our own home, we slept in the cupboard under the stairs. Now, do both of you live in a house or in a flat?
House.
In a house?
Yeah.
Right.
I live in a flat.
You live in a flat. Well, Edward, then, I imagine under the stairs, is there a cupboard in your house?
I've got a strange kind of roof of house. At the front door, there's a stairs going up.
Yes.
A little platform, one going down.
Yes.
But there were cupboards, but just not by the staircase, just other bits.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Well, in the house, in my home, most of the houses were built like that in those days. The stairs would go up to the landing, of course, to the bedrooms, but underneath the stairs was a cupboard, usually two cupboards, in fact. And they were considered to be, under the stairs was considered to be one of the safest places to be. But unfortunately, we couldn't get the four of us all in this small cupboard. So what we did, Dad said, well, we'll sleep with our head and chest in the cupboard, but with our legs in the in the passageway. And that was the best we could. How we ever got any sleep, I really don't know. But I want to tell you what happened next, because we didn't only sleep at home. As the Blitz got worse and worse, Dad was given permission for us to use the cellar of one of his shops that was nearest to us. So off we'd go every evening with our blankets and our snakes and ladders, board and whatever else, our tin hats, our gas masks and all the rest of it, and we'd go into the cellar under the shop. Now, there in the cellar were bunk beds, and my sister, who was horrible to me and knew I hated spiders, she saw to it that I went in the top bunk, which was right near the ceiling, and all the spiders would run across this. Yes, Tabitha, you don't like them either, I can see this. Oh no, she we did have some lovely games together, and she thought up lovely things for me to do, but she could be very nasty to me and teasing me about, and I was much more scared of the spiders, I can tell you that, in those cellars, much more scared than the bombs. The spiders totally freaked me out, you see. And she would say, there's one I saw one go in, I saw one go under your sheet, she'd say. And then I'd sit up suddenly and hit my head on the ceiling, you see. Oh, yes, she was very cruel.
Yeah, I thought that's the kind of thing you would get in the bottom bunk, hit your head on the top.
Well, yes, it was indeed. Well, it could have happened, but it was a narrower gap between the top bunk and the ceiling, in actual fact. So me being the little one, you see, I had to go up there. So that was that. And one day there was a tremendous raid, and we couldn't get out of the cellar in the morning. When Dad tried to lift the trap door, you see, for us all to come up, what we'd do is it was then go, first of all, we'd go home with me picking up the shrapnel on the way. We'd then have whatever we had for breakfast, and heaven knows what we had for breakfast. I can't imagine. I think we must have had a piece of toast, and that's it, because there wouldn't have been anything else. And then we'd go to school. But on that particular occasion, all the tins in the shop, all the what such tins as were in the shop, of a few baked beans and a few tins of corned beef or Spam, as it was, were all had fallen on top of the trapdoor, so we couldn't get out. It was all to do before we could get out of the trapdoor. We were trapped there.
How was your sister affected by the war?
My sister, well, bearing in mind she was 5 years older than I was, my sister's interest was primarily boys. She really wasn't too worried about anything else, really. So she was concerned. See, and also there was no clothes either. We didn't have any. We had ration books. How could she make herself pretty for the boys? You see, it was very difficult. So anyway, she had to do what she could. And as she was very pretty, she was quite successful. So that was what my sister spent her time thinking about mainly during the war.
Was she ever like kind of worried about whether one of the boys died in the war or something like that?
No, she wasn't worried whether they died or not. No, what she worried about, what she was more worried, and I used to help her with this, though I was much younger. They all used to fall in love with her, you see, and then she'd have difficulty choosing which one she liked best. And I can remember one night in the air raid shelter, helping my sister write a letter to her latest, to a boy that she'd once liked, but was now getting on her nerves. And she wrote this letter with my help, which said, "Dear John, so and so and so and so, I don't want to see you anymore because you get on my nerves." And then she said, "Once I thought you were very nice, but now I think you are rotten." And she signed the letter, "Love, Betty." Oh, now I've lost my microphone again. Oh dear. It got caught on my watch strap.
Right, let's plug it back in for you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, my microphone slipped just then because it got caught on my watch strap. I got excited telling you that story. Yes?
Could you tell us about your scariest moment?
Oh, yes, I can. And do you know, I don't know whether it actually happened or not.
Sometimes I get that.
Do you? Do you really?
Yeah, because once I was like wondering if I got robbed one night, and it was like a family of robbers, and my mum said, "Oh, they're outside. I'm going to have to go outside and talk to them."
Well,
I wasn't. I was like, "Was that real?"
Oh well, there you are. Well, maybe this will be of interest to you because I've told this story now so many times that I don't now know whether it really happened or not. What was happening was, I'll tell you the story as I remember it. I was returning to school after my baked potato with my mother on my bike, which didn't have any gears, but I love my bike. I used to go actually on my bike to watch all the dog fights, the Spitfires fighting over Biggin Hill in Kent. Well, anyway, so I was on my way back to school and the air raid warden siren went. And I kept on pedalling. I thought I'll go get to the school and then I'll go in the shelter. Before I could get to there, however, a plane swooped down. Now, I actually thought I was machine gunned. And I threw myself into the gutter, fell off the bike, lay in the gutter, and believed that I'd been machine gunned. Now, and I told everybody that I'd been machine gunned, and of course everybody thought this was very exciting. And then I told the story so many times that I truly cannot remember whether it you see, where I was riding my bike was on an unmade up road with a lot of pebbles. So what might have sounded like a machine gun could have been the pebbles flying up from the wheels. Do you see what I mean? But it was rather exciting to think that I was the heroine of such a, you know, that the bad German plane had singled me out to machine gun me. So, of course, a lot of people were very interested in my story, but I don't know whether it happened or not.
So who was the first one to tell you, was that story really true?
Well, nobody, you see, because nobody was there. And I can't even tell myself whether it was really true or not. I've told, you see, this is what can happen. I don't know whether both of you, we all tell fibs, I'm sad to say. And sometimes, if we tell a fib often enough, we can. It becomes as though it's true. And I'm afraid that I think that was something that might have happened over this story of being machine gunned. But another thing that happened at school, and that was a very scary moment. During the war, we did have films. We did have the cinema to go to. And there was a particular film star, an Indian boy called Sabu. And I rather fancied him. I thought he was lovely. And he was in a beautiful film of the Jungle Book, you know. We talked to the animals and Mowgli and the wolves and all the rest. Anyway, my friend Evelyn and I, we were always hungry. And behind the bike sheds at school, if there wasn't an air raid on, there was a little stream. And we used to pretend we were Mowgli and we would go over the stream, because there was an orchard the other side, and we'd steal the apples, I'm sad to say, but anyway, we were hungry, so we did that. But we also made a bridge across the stream, thinking we were Mowgli again. And we collected stones and bricks and stuff and made a bridge in the stream. And then, that night, it rained and it rained and it rained. And when I came to school on my bike the next morning, there wasn't a hockey pitch anymore. There was a lake. And on the lake were seagulls floating. And a duck. Well, when we went into school assembly, do you have school assembly?
Yes.
Well, in school assembly, the headmistress, Miss Fox, was a very strict lady, and she stood up and she said, "This is a very serious morning, girls. Somebody has been very, very wicked, and they have flooded, they've been very, very naughty, and they have flooded the hockey pitch. We found a dam, they built a dam over the stream, and they flooded the hockey pitch, and I want those culprits to stand forth now and own up to it." Did I own up to it? Do you think? What do you think?
No.
I didn't. I didn't own up to it. No. So I was in trouble over that. And I was also in trouble with Miss Fox for eating the iron rations that we were all given when we went into the air raid shelter. When the siren went at school, you see, we'd all have to go in orderly fashion. No pushing, no shoving, no running, please. Silence, into the air raid shelter, and we'd take our gas mask with us. We were there given biscuits. Well, I managed to get hold of some of the biscuits. And I ate more than I should. So she found out about that. So I was not popular, you see. So this is why I thought, well, as she hates me for having eaten more biscuits than I should, I'm certainly not going to stand forth and say that I've flooded the hockey pitch.
Linking up to
yes.
The shrapnel swapping.
Yes.
Is that how you got more biscuits for swapping shrapnel?
I think I did. How clever you are to remember these things. You're a very good interviewer, Edward. You really are. I think you're going to be a journalist or a TV presenter, my dear. Yes, you're absolutely right. I think I did. I had some very exceptional pieces of shrapnel, and I almost certainly did swap them for other girls. But they were exceptionally good biscuits, and I don't think they make them anymore. Do you know a biscuit that's a bit like a cream cracker, only it's got like custard cream in the
is
centre?
It the one with like two
yes, it's like a sandwich.
We love those.
We
always take them apart and lick them.
That's right, we did. We used to do it. Yes, that's lovely. But you only got them though when there was a raid on, you see. There were no biscuits, so it was a treat, you see, to take our mind off things. Yes, Tabitha. They were a bit like custard creams, but a different kind of biscuit, more like a cream cracker, see, than the biscuit of a custard cream. But yeah,
we've got a new one. There's a new one. It's a brown one. It's got two bits and it's got some brown chocolate inside it.
I'm not so fond of those. I think they're called bourbons, but I don't go bundle on those. No, I've never forgotten those. Those biscuits in the Blitz, they were very, very special. Yes.
Could you tell me a little bit about your happiest moment?
Oh, the happiest moment. What a nice idea to think about. Well, again, you see, it's going to be rather a deplorable story, really, because one happy moment, as I recall, was a beautiful summer day. This was when the Battle of Britain, you know about the Battle of Britain, don't you? when there were so few of our airmen fighting this tremendous, which saved us. Well, anyway, our neighbours knocked on the door and said, come out and watch this. So out we went, and everybody was out in the street, beautiful summer, sandy afternoon, and up in the sky were all these planes flying about, you see, and the Germans were chasing, Spitfires were with the trails, you know, like the red arrows, you know, they were leaving trails in the sky. And then, of course, some of them were going into a nosedive spin. You know, you've seen it, haven't you, on the television, on films too. They went into a, which meant they were going to crash and be killed. But of course, we could only think, we were encouraged to hate the Germans, you see. We were encouraged not to think of them as human beings. They were their enemy. So when you saw a plane go and start on this terrible journey down with all the smoke pouring out of it, we didn't. We were cheering and we were laughing. We thought it was wonderful. It was like a football match, you know, our side's winning. Way. It was all like that. So that made us happy. But a thing that made me, I think, probably more happy was to go on my bike on my own without the gears, very arduous pedaling up to a particular place, and I'd be able to make a peculiar kind of lemonade. What on earth was it made out of? I don't know. I think it was probably made out of rose. It wasn't lemonade at all. It was made out of rose petals, if you please, with some fizzies or something as well, which we called lemonade. Anyway, I would pedal over to this beautiful part of the countryside and there watch over a lovely green valley called Biggin Hill, in the valley there in Kent. We'd watch all the young airmen and the Spitfires chasing each other and so on. But it was so beautiful there. It seemed unreal, you see. We didn't really take seriously what the awful thing that was going on in the skies. So that was happy. And then there was another happy moment at the end of the war, but I don't know whether you want me to talk only about the Blitz, Edward and Tabitha. Is it mainly the Blitz?
Yeah, it's mainly the Blitz.
It's mainly the Blitz. Yes, I'm trying to think about other things to do with... Well, of course, I tell you, as we got older, Betty, when she was about 16, 17, we would have parties. Now, what on earth could we have a party with, you may ask, because there was nothing to eat. Well, we'd have the bread made into sandwiches with a bit of Marmite on it. Hope you like Marmite. Do you like it? Well, that's all right. Or paste. Oh dear. Oh dear, dear, dear. Anyway, so that would be the party. I'm afraid there really wouldn't be anything else. But we'd have games, see? And this would all be very exciting because some of the games were kissing games, which my sister came into her own over this. So anyway, so whenever we had a party, that was exciting and we were happy then.
Did you ever have a birthday party in the air raid shelter?
No, I don't remember a birthday party in the air, but I do remember every Christmas during the war, my aunt had a poultry farm at Woking, and a chicken was a great luxury, not now, you know, but then a tremendous luxury. So this chicken would arrive through the post. We were always quite worried had it gone off, because there were no fridges either. But anyway, God help her, my poor mother, she managed to provide us with a Christmas, and... you know, there were really no... What do we have as gifts? I mean, I did... What? Whatever we would make things, of course. We children would make things out of crepe paper, usually. You know those little boxes that cheese round boxes that cheese slices come, cheese triangles come in. You know those, don't you? Well, we would make at school, we'd make plaits of crepe paper, narrow plaits of crepe paper, and glue them round these boxes, and that was supposed to be for our mums to keep, I don't know, keep a ring in or a hanky in or something. So we'd do that, you see. And we would also make, we would make lots of things. We would probably make more things than you do these days, because there were things to buy now, and in those days there wasn't anything to buy. The shops were empty, you see. It's so difficult for you to begin to imagine. It's difficult for me to remember how little we had, actually.
Could you tell me a little about the special events that you remember?
Oh, the special events. Well, as I say to you, the arrival of the chicken was a very special event. And another special event I'm trying to think particularly about the Blitz. I should be so cross after you've gone if I think of something that I haven't told you. But I think, you see, probably most meal times, Tabitha, they were special events, you know. We could be quite hungry a lot of the time, you see. So that would be. And what a special event could also be one of our favourite programmes on the wireless, because there was a particular comedian called Tommy Handley, Itmar, and various, and we'd have our favourite dance bands, or we'd have our favourite programmes, as you have your favourite programmes on television now, so we had our favourite programmes on the wireless, and so that would be. But of course the most biggest special event was naturally the end of the war, when we had the street parties and great celebrations then. That was very special.
So, so was the daytime better than the night time?
I would say so. Yes, I think so. I think the darkness and things certainly were more frightening, I'd say, at night. The doodle bugs would somehow seem more menacing, this business of them, the drone and then the cutting out and then this awful anxiety as to where they were actually going to fall. Yes, you see, during the day you could keep busy, but during the night you would be stuck there in your shelter wondering whether you were going to be, you'd had not much to occupy you, there was plenty of time for the adults anyway to worry, was the next one actually going to fall on you?
Also, I've just thought of the question I was thinking of earlier on, and also another one. First, in your experience of all the shelters you've used, which one's the best shelter?
Ah, what a good question. What a good question. Well, I think that we tended to use, whether it was the best shelter or not, I mean, people did think the Anderson shelters were very good.
Outside?
The ones outside, yes. Do they have one at the Imperial War Museum? I think they must have, actually. But I think that we found our shorn-up room with the beams, with the posts and the beams and all of it, and the blast wall. I think we probably felt most comfortable in there because there was more room, you see. It was, after all, a room, not a tiny space. And there weren't many spiders in there, which was my main concern.
I'm
saying there weren't many spiders in there.
I thought you didn't finish, sorry.
Oh, no.
I was just going to ask, did you ever ask your mum, could we like make a little hole in the top, or like a little thing that could you slide back in front and look forward and see if the bomb that, you know, which made a noise and then stopped, and you could look through to see if it's landing on you?
Oh, no. No, because you see, you would never see it coming. They fell so fast, you see. There was no way, and if the, it depended. They didn't go necessarily straight down. If there was a strong wind blowing, the wind would carry them on away, so you could could stop dead above you. This is why it made people so anxious and jittery. This is what the Germans wanted, those doodlebugs. They were designed not so much to kill people, but to totally make people into nervous wrecks. It was called to lower the morale of people. They were out. You see, when you make people terribly, terribly nervous, they then can't, well, they can't function properly, you see. So that it was all what was called a war of nerves. They were trying to break our spirit. And of course, it was the great Sir Winston Churchill, although a lot of people don't remember him kindly now, but during the war, I can tell you that when he spoke on the radio, everything was silent. You know, it was to listen to Sir Winston Churchill and his words of encouragement.
So how did you feel when you England thrashed England, but completely just bombed Berlin? Did you feel the revenge? Because,
well, yeah. Again, you see, it's now, Edward, when I see the films of these terrible bombings of Dresden and the German cities, you know, just... But then, again, we truly only thought just as though it were a football match and nothing more. I can only talk about... You see... Our family were very, very lucky. We didn't have any young man. There was nobody in our family killed in the war or injured in the war, mercifully. So it didn't hit us, in other words, as hard as it hit many other families. But when, you know, we heard of when the news would come and they'd say, you know, so many thousands of the Germans have been killed, you know, we'd be pleased. We'd just be pleased about it all. So I don't think that's my phone going off. I think that's somebody else's. But that's all part of life.
Could you tell me a little about the experience of the bombing?
The actual bombing, well, I mean, what would happen? I've talked a little about the doodle bugs, haven't I? But the actual bombs, you'd hear the whistle. You would hear, you know, as the bomb came down. And then, of course, when a bomb exploded... talking about if it exploded at a distance, it would shake, the whole ground would shake. And so everything, all the cups and saucers would rattle and the cupboard and things might fall off the mantel shelf and that kind of thing. But of course, if it was closer, then, as I've said, the windows could blow out. In spite of the paper strips, the windows could go. It was called the blast, you see. It wasn't because of the shock wave. When the explosion happens, it forces the air under pressure. The air, like a ripple in the water, only it's the air, creates a ripple of air that is very powerful, and so it can smash glass. So it will do that, and it will bring the ceilings down, you see, when the chimney pots can come crashing down and come through the roof, and all sorts of things like that. So, but of course, I mean, I mercifully never was in a situation to where I wouldn't be here if I'd been in under a direct hit, you know, I would have been killed. So I don't think I can tell you. Does that answer your question, Tabitha, really? Yes. Yes.
Also, I was just going to say, were there any bits of the house which your parents or someone from school just told you, you should never go to the park, that's the most place that you would be easily bombed or the first one to get bombed?
The biggest warnings of all, we had several kind of warnings. One was definitely no light at all at night. The utmost care never to show a chink of light, not to light a match outside, not to light a cigarette outside, because in those days, people, if they could get, when they could get the cigarettes, they were smoking all the time because it eased their nerves, you see. So it was to do with light, really, and it wasn't so much a place you mustn't go, but when the air raid warning, when the siren went, that you had to take shelter. The idea was that you must get inside, undercover somewhere, to avoid the shrapnel. That was it, really. The worry was that you were going to be hit by shrapnel. And of course, also you might get hit by a bomb. But there's really nothing you can do if you're going to be hit by a bomb, whether you're out in the open or whether you're inside a building. If it's a direct hit, there's nothing you can do about that. So it was mainly to do with light, that the warnings. Yes.
So I think that basically sums up the interview now.
Does it?
Yeah.
Right. Well, I do hope, as I say, I hope that's been of some use to you. And I don't know whether I've kind of been able to tell you things that you didn't already know. I hope so. I hope you've got a bit of a clearer picture of what it was like. But it's, yes,
Tabitha. Thank you very much.
It's been absolutely brilliant. Thanks.
Oh, well, thank you both very much. I thoroughly enjoyed talking to you.